Welcome, virtual entrepreneurs, millennials on the go, and adventure seekers with big dreams. You found the right place. My name is Alexis Teichmiller, a millennial, lifestyle blogger, and digital creative. The Laptop Lifestyle is designed to inspire, educate, and challenge you to live the life you want every day. Together, let's unlock how to live the laptop lifestyle to the fullest. What up, Laptop Lifestylers? Welcome back to the Laptop Lifestyle. This is your host, Alexis Teichmiller, and today on the show, we have, honestly, one of the most incredible lady bosses I've ever met on the internet. Her name is Marissa Sergi. Marissa is the CEO of Redhead Wine. Her love affair with wine started in the basement of her parents' home with a zippy cup at age 5. In 5th grade, she went public with her dream of being a winemaker. A third-generation winemaker, Marissa came by her career choice naturally, having grown up in the family winery business. And in 2015, she graduated from Cornell with a degree in Enology and Viticulture, which is the science of winemaking and the art of grape growing, which is incredible. She also interned and worked for E.J. Gallo Winery in California. During her senior year capstone project at Cornell, it led her to launch Redhead Wine. And although Marissa's only been working full-time on Redhead for the last couple of months, it's already available in nearly 200 stores in Ohio. And she is consistently working at putting out new different types of wines. And honestly, she is such an innovator and a complete lady boss. In this episode, you will learn the importance of asking for help and feedback on your work, the value of in-person connections to grow your online business, what it means to be a woman in business, and how to master the power of unconventional thinking. Guys, this is a good one. Marissa is such a trendsetter with the way that she thinks. She's so positive. I honestly cannot wait for you guys to dive into this episode. If this episode resonates with you, please, please, please leave a comment or a review on iTunes. I would love to hear your guys' thoughts and share it with your friends on social media. All right, guys, let's jump in. Hey, hey, Laptop Lifestylers. It is your host, Alexis Teichmiller here. And today, I'm super stoked to have Marissa Sergi of Redhead Wine on the show. She's an entrepreneur, a total lady boss, and I'm excited to hear more of her story and share it with you guys. Hey, Marissa, how's it going?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's morning. I've got my coffee, and I'm really excited to learn all about you and how you got started with Redhead Wine.
Oh, I'm excited to get started.
Yeah, for sure. So tell me how... I know that you went to Cornell University, and is that kind of where Redhead Wine started? Just start from the beginning. Tell me all the nitty gritty.
Absolutely. So Cornell had a huge part in helping me create Redhead Wine and really setting that foundation. But it all started with my grandparents immigrating here from Italy and bringing over the tradition of winemaking. And that's actually how they provided for the family. So as a third generation winemaker, it's in the blood at this point. And I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do when I graduated from high school. And I discovered that Cornell University offered a winemaking major called Enology and Viticulture, which is a science of winemaking and grape growing. So being at Cornell really helped set the path for establishing Redhead Wine.
Wow. I did not know that that was still a major, and I think that that's incredible. So it's Enology in Viticulture. Is that correct?
Yes. It's spelled V-I-T-I-C-U-L-T-U-R-E, Viticulture. And then Enology is E-N-O-L-O-G-Y.
Wow. So this, like you said, this was in the blood. I mean, you knew that you wanted to create wine. I personally love wine. And so I love people like you who are creating new different types of wine. So you got into Cornell. You took this incredible major that was very specific. Tell me that decision of, going after the family business versus maybe doing something else. Was that something that was very natural to you, or did you just know, I want to make wine?
Yes, it was pretty natural to me, but also during my journey, at least maybe freshman and sophomore year, I always contemplated what else interests me and what else could I be doing besides wine. So I did take some other unique classes at Cornell, but I actually found that I was really passionate about wine through my capstone project at school, because I really wasn't interested in working in the vineyards, but I discovered that I really enjoyed being creative, and I asked my professors if I established a wine label, could I create a written part of the capstone to fulfill the requirement, through the, like, seeing how it, I could market it and develop the taste profile of wine, and they said sure. So through that journey, it was something that I really enjoyed working on, and Redhead became less of a project and more of an addiction to keep building it and getting more research done for the capstone project. So after I created a label, I proposed it to the professors at Cornell, and I worked on it since I was 19. I actually wasn't even legal to drink my own product when I started.
Oh my gosh.
So it's been about 5 years since then. So it's been definitely a work in progress.
And so are you still, I mean, you're still pursuing Redhead Wine. I know that. But are you, at what point did you know, okay, I know you said that it became less of a project and more of an addiction, which I love that phrase. At what point in time did you know, okay, I have a business here, this is something I want to pursue full time, or, you know, this is something that I want to make, you know, really successful and, you know, grow it?
Definitely my spring semester of my senior year. At that point, I have completely written a multi-award winning business plan. And after the third competition that we placed in, I thought to myself, wow, this might have some real potential. Because not only did I have a lot of time involved and invested in the company or in the capstone project, but I received a lot of positive feedback from industry professionals or other seasoned entrepreneurs, people that had 20 plus years of experience, or a senior vice president of Constellation Brands at a competition I pitched at called the Queen's Entrepreneurs Competition in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. So hearing those things that, like, I'm there to get criticized and it was pretty much all positive, I really felt like it could prosper into something significant. But at that time, it really wasn't all about the business. It was about really continuing the work that I truly enjoyed. It took me a long time to find something I actually really was passionate about, felt like it wasn't work, it was fun, but also going somewhere. So I really didn't want to let go of that.
Yeah. And so I love that you said that it takes some time to find out what you're passionate about and something that you actually want to grow, because that's difficult. I mean, especially as an entrepreneur, whenever you're kind of going back and forth on, should I do this? Should I pursue this? What path is the right path? How do you know when you're headed in the right direction and then when you're headed in maybe the wrong direction? How are you able to pick up on that? And then, you know, do you immediately take action? Do you seek outside help? How do you know, you know, when you're moving in the right direction and then when you're not? How do you, you know, turn the car around and head back in the direction that you want to be going?
Yes. Definitely great question. And I, full disclosure, some days are great. Some days I want to pull my hair out and quit. But at the end of the day, when I have a nice glass of wine to unwind, I tell myself it's all worth it. And if you didn't have those bad moments, you wouldn't appreciate the positive. But honestly, when the minutes go by so quickly, like hours just melt away, you know you're doing something you enjoy. I mean, when I'm working out, if I'm on the treadmill and I'm always looking at my Fitbit, oh, it's only been 2 minutes. It feels like a half hour. That's when you know you're not enjoying something. But also, if I am stuck in a rut, I do call on my friends, my professors, anyone in the community, especially in Youngstown, Ohio, the Youngstown business incubator and other people in the community have been so supportive as well. I'm not afraid to ask for help. It is so important to not feel like entrepreneurship is a one-man band. Something that I really like to emphasize when I'm speaking to people or just in this podcast, the answer is always no if you don't ask. Take down that fear of rejection and just go for it, because if you're not trying or going in for the ask, you're already rejecting opportunities that could take you from being stressed out and frustrated to really conquering things that you couldn't imagine. So, I really believe in taking those moments to unwind and relax and realize that it's not all going to be fun and games, but really knowing that you're doing something that you're enjoying, and also asking people for help when necessary, because you're not going to make it alone. You absolutely will not. Maybe to a certain milestone, but you really need to have people that believe in you, support you, and want to help you accomplish your goals. And of course, you would help other people with their goals and dreams as well along the way. It's a really important concept to believe that it's a group effort, to never be selfish in entrepreneurship.
Oh girl, everything that you just said there, I'm like taking notes. That's so good.
Thank
I
you.
absolutely 100% believe you. And entrepreneurship is rooted in service, but also I think a lot of times people don't realize it's also rooted in teamwork. And it actually, whenever you're talking, it reminded me of that. I think it's an African proverb of, if you want to go fast, go alone, but if you want to go far, go together. And that's exactly what you just said, and I love that mentality. It's really hard sometimes whenever you're living a laptop lifestyle. Maybe you're creating something on the side, maybe you're full time, maybe what you're creating is all online. How do you create that team effort? Like you said, you're at an incubator right now in Ohio. So, you have people around you who are able to give you feedback and help you, whenever you might be struggling with something or give you advice. But for people that are, and I'm sure you can even relate to this too, whenever you are more centered online, you're trying to build a brand online, how do you reach out to people whenever you might actually just be a solopreneur? How do you build a team?
Great question. I mean, it's all about unconventional thinking, because I feel like the space online is very crowded. Like, how do you stand out? I believe having a laptop lifestyle is also needing to be balanced with being out there in the community, going to events like conferences or conventions, summits, meeting your and customer, or someone that's going to really enjoy what services you're offering, because you can't really replace in-person connections. I mean, of course, you could connect on LinkedIn, you could tweet, you can message on Facebook, whatever, FaceTime. It all helps. But also, if you have those face-to-face connections that you could curate by just putting yourself out there, if you gain like 10 really diehard supportive fans every day, imagine how many people you're going to be adding and building to the community that you want to resonate with your brand or services. And when I believe in something personally, like a food product or a brand, I'm telling my friends. And my friends trust my judgment, I trust my friends, and we all kind of explore our likes and dislikes together. So having those like unpaid brand ambassadors almost are really important to being successful in building a brand online, or just curating a successful laptop lifestyle. So I believe that might be a really unconventional answer, but I found it very effective for my brand, because I have a lot of advertisement or content that is valuable online, but also wine is an in-person product, So you can't really drink it through computers. So I have to really find that balance of both being out there online, but also in people's hands and top of mind through guerrilla marketing.
Yes, I have so many questions. I love what you just said. That is so, so, so true. Something that you said that really sparked interest in me is that, you know, you're getting out and you're talking to your customers, you're asking for their feedback, you're asking for their opinion. And I think a lot of times as an entrepreneur, we create things and we're so proud of them, but we forget to ask if anybody needs them or if anybody likes it, you know? And so we try to sell it or we try to make a business out of it, but we haven't really gotten in touch with our target audience or our target consumer. So how do you personally go about that? And you kind of mentioned it a little bit, but talk about the importance of that customer feedback, because, you know, I'm sure you can't create a great tasting wine based off of your own taste buds. You know, you have to test the market and see what other people are, you know, are thinking and liking. And so how have you cultivated that with Redhead Wine?
Yes, it's so important for me to not forget that. Yes, I have a lot of personal likes and dislikes, but developing the profile for Redhead, especially the Red Blend, which is a blend of Zinfandel and Carmenere from California. So it's very fruit forward with, yes, it is so delicious, not to be a bias or anything, but it's it's very smooth and fruity with a light spice, a lot of plums, cherries, blackberries, a hint of strawberry, and a light spicy kick to make it a balanced profile. I like to say it's lightly sweet, lightly spicy, just like a redhead.
I have to say,
I used my opinion for my first blend, which was back in 2013, but by donating the wine to charity events that I definitely believe in and support, I go there to work the event. I have a booth or I'm just a volunteer pouring the wine and I'm talking to people about their background. Do they like wine? Do you want to try some? And I get that feedback, or I give out samples in grocery stores. I see if people are interested in trying a sample. They give me their feedback. They might buy a few bottles on the spot. And I've been able to develop a recipe that is more targeted to my customer besides myself, although I personally love my recipe. One thing that I will never ever change with my philosophy is that I will never sell a wine I would not personally drink myself, because as a winemaker, I don't want to develop a product that I believe appeals to the masses, but I wouldn't enjoy it. I feel like it's phony. It's not authentic. I really want to know that I believe in something that I'm providing someone. I mean, food is so important to our livelihood. I mean, we are what we eat. I don't want to serve someone something that I don't think is good for them or something that I wouldn't put in my own body.
Preach. I love that. Well, because I think whenever you sell something to the masses just to sell it, and you, the creator of it, aren't proud of it or wouldn't use it yourself, like, you're kind of teetering on that line of like being a sellout of, oh, yeah. I wanted to create this just because I knew it would sell, not because I actually believe in the product or am proud of what I created. And, you know, you're so on point there. And I also think it's really admirable that, you know, you have cultivated this brand that you've built off of having customer relations, but also you're proud of the product. I mean, have you ever created something that maybe you're not proud of?
Maybe a few papers I procrastinated with in college, but for the brand, no, not at all.
It's awesome.
With Redhead, like, I'm a redhead myself, so I've been able to put a lot of personal and just basic creativity into playing with the messaging. I feel like redheads can stick out from the crowd, so I'm trying to convey that when you drink redhead wine, you are a trendsetter, you are going to be memorable, you'll never blend in, stuff like that. Just because I feel like, well, there's a dichotomy to it. Society puts a lot of pressures on individuals to kind of conform and be the person that the media expects or just your peers, but also embracing your inner self and maybe embracing that inner redhead. I mean, redheads are known to be very outgoing and sassy and opinionated, and I feel like everyone has an opinion that needs to be expressed. Their thoughts are valued, and if you embrace that so-called inner redhead, you could really gain a lot of self-esteem that maybe you didn't have, or meet people that believe in things that you may have been afraid to convey, and things along those lines. So it's something that I really enjoy sharing with people, as well as curating a wine with a platform to just be yourself and be out there and take risks.
Preach. I love that. I love that there's so many different meanings and kind of brands that, like, the branding of Redhead Wine. I love that, you know, it's a personality. It also describes you, who's the creator. And it also can describe, you know, that energy that redheads have that you can bring out to other people who might not have red hair. But I love that. I actually, this is a question I've never asked anybody on the show before, but something that you said kind of sparked interest in me about the media and how it kind of pushes us to be something or to be more or to be less. What's it like for you in the wine industry specifically to be a woman entrepreneur?
Yes. So I honestly have to say it is absolutely phenomenal. Although I've been asked this a few times before, kind of like, you're a woman, you're a minority, there aren't a lot of women winemakers, etc. But also, I believe that it's so important not to kind of view it that way, because if you label yourself as a minority or something along those lines, you're already labeling yourself, you're already putting yourself in that box. But knowing that there are a lot of resources for specifically winemakers or women entrepreneurs, it just kind of increases your chances to succeed and be different, be memorable, to stand out, just because you always have to find that niche, how you can be different and enter a market that might be crowded. And I feel like all those things that you asked me are a huge advantage. And it's an exciting time to be an entrepreneur or just a woman in general, with all the positive social movements going on and being able to be an advocate for expressing yourself, being opinionated, not being afraid to have unconventional thinking or just being yourself. It's definitely a passion of mine and an honor to be able to curate that through the wine that I serve.
Girl, I like you so much. I love your spin on that, because it's so positive. Like, you know, I think that's something right now, whether you're a woman in entrepreneurship, whether you're a man in entrepreneurship, but, like, I feel like there are a lot of different opinions on business ownership and the way that we should all live our lives in general. Like, the media has such an influence in our lives. And I love that you said that what makes you different is actually what makes you successful, and it gives you opportunity. So instead of seeing something that, you know, could be taken negatively, you know, don't put a label on it, don't put a category on it, or put yourself in a box, because you're limiting yourself. And I think that's incredible. I love that you keep saying the phrase unconventional thinking. And I want to kind of break that down and explore that a little bit. What does that mean to you? And then how has that really taken a massive, you know, role in the way that you run your business?
It's so important to try not to be narrow-minded, especially as an entrepreneur, because if you see entrepreneurialism is such a growing segment of just a lifestyle or which is a growing category in business. I feel it's so important, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, to really try to think outside the box. It's kind of cliche, but it's so important. What is your competition doing that you could do better or do different, or something that has never been done in the industry? I mean, think about Uber, how successful they've been, and it's such a simple model. It's because someone, I mean, a team of people have been thinking outside the box. And I feel like wine has kind of been put in this box where it needs to be a certain way. You need to be a certain person or have a certain background or educational background to enjoy it properly. And that's not what I'm advocating for Redhead brands, especially Redhead brand wine. I want anyone, regardless if they've had wine before or feel a certain way when they have to drink wine with a certain crowd or certain budget, I want it to be almost the craft beer of the wine industry, that anyone can feel comfortable trying it, exploring it, discussing it, sharing it with people, because I'm trying to break down those barriers that you need to be at a fancy restaurant ordering from a mile-long wine menu to enjoy wine. Redhead is the wine for everyone. I mean, I have a winemaking degree, as well as I'm a third-generation winemaker, and Redhead is a wine for me. Or my friend, who never really liked wine before, has consumed and tried Redhead and loves it. It's something that's approachable and you could feel good about because it's classy. It's a super premium wine blend from California, but it's also not what you'd expect. I mean, a lot of red wines are dry, astringent, or bitter, but Redhead is just very smooth and fruity and very approachable, very drinkable, but not cheap. That makes sense. So Thinking unconventionally with wine, not only is the recipe unique, but the packaging is very eye-catching. It's fun. It's a little sexy, but it's classy. It pops off the shelf. So a lot of the competition does not have a package that is as nice as mine. And that's my opinion, but my customers also share that opinion. So it's not just me. Yeah.
No, girl, I love your logo. I love your branding. Like you said, it's very classy. It's very, you know, feminine, but it also has that very like classy and sexy vibe to it. It definitely would pop off, you know, the shelf. I can't wait to try it. Like, I'm going to get off this interview right now and I'm going to order some because I love wine and I also love people that put so much effort into their product, and I can just feel that from the way that you talk about it, and I can't wait to drink it.
Thank you. I definitely am working on more distribution. You could only find it in the market in Ohio, but I'm in conversations with a large distribution company, and I'm going to find out in the next few weeks on what the game plan is going forward with them. So hopefully I'll be in the Nashville area or in other states, but you can order it online. I do have a website. It's redheadwine.us.
All right. Well, I'll be ordering it from there then.
Perfect.
But tell me about that. Tell me about the distribution struggle of getting your wine into stores. I mean, girl, I don't know anything about this business, and I'm sorry if some of the questions I'm asking you are basic, but honestly, I just am so curious, and I want to know that process of, okay, you've got the branding, it's super strong, you've got the product, it tastes incredible, you're in touch with your customers. Now it gets to the point where you want to distribute, you kind of want to scale. Tell me about that process.
Yes, it's a little complicated, especially that Redhead is a B2B and a B2C business. I have to influence a distributor, so whoever is the decision maker there on what products they're going to represent, because their portfolio is only so large and they only could focus so much time on the products they represent. So you have to convince them that you are sellable, marketable, and obviously consumable. And then you have to influence a wine buyer of a large grocery store or a small mom and pop chain. So right now I'm working with Giant Eagle and Bueller's and Sparkle and Rully Brothers in the Ohio markets. And I presented to some of the decision makers and they love the product. Or I have customers that go to the stores and influence a distributor to sell to those stores to provide for them. I mean, they're asking the store owners, where's Redhead One? I want to buy it. And some stores, people have been asking for months and they still haven't been able to get it in because it's such a long process. There's a lot of decision makers that need to approve an authorization. So it's definitely a roller coaster ride. And all that I could do to suggest, and anyone that's doing something similar to me, is to be patient, but also do your research. Make sure you have customers that really want your product in that market. It's great to be on a shelf, but you don't want to be left on a shelf. So it's good to focus in markets that you know your customer is at, rather than just saying you're in one more additional store. And of course, if you have that mindset, the distributor will want to work with you more because you're not wasting their time, you're not wasting other people's time, and you're just providing value. And the value you provide as a business owner is so important because that's what gets you remembered. I want people to remember Marissa Sergi who, as a CEO of Redhead Wine, as someone that doesn't waste their time and really gets things done. And also sells a lot of product because that's a win-win-win in that situation and when working with a distributor. But kind of answering more of your question with the distribution, you really just got to go reach out and ask for 15 minutes of a distribution company's time. Because if they like you, they're going to want to sit with you longer than 15 minutes. As long as you get your foot in the door, you definitely have a chance to succeed.
How do you go about reaching out to these brands? I mean, whether like in your case, it is distributors, but in like the general sense of entrepreneurship, kind of going back to one of your first comments about, you know, asking for help and building a team, is you also have to be okay with reaching out and asking for, you know, whether it's 15 minutes of someone's time, or maybe you want to partner with a photographer and you want to do a photo shoot. Like, how do you get to the point in your confidence level where you are 100% secure, or you're almost secure in yourself to where you can go and you can ask for help, or you can ask somebody, you know, to work together, to partner, strategic partnerships and things like that? How do you go about doing that? And then the kind of the mindset behind it, I'd love for you to kind of explore that with me.
That's great. I mean, it all comes down to believing in your product or service. That helps with the confidence that you hold when you walk into a meeting, because if you're selling some BS product, you're going to be nervous because you know it's not bringing value or really worth their time, but you're just trying to make a one-off dollar. I mean, if you know that you're adding value and your product or service is going to really help people enjoy life or learn and grow or whatever it is, you'll be fine. But the thing is, it's not only just the product, but it's also how you view yourself. It is not the easiest thing to be confident. I believe it's one of the most challenging things to do in this society, or just on a personal level. You need to just kind of practice. Just tell yourself, yes, people will reject me, but one person out there will believe in me. And once you find that one person, you start finding other people like that individual that also wants to support you. And once you start building that snowball of people that believe in you, want to support you, and want you to succeed with your business, the confidence starts to build even more. You kind of find your tribe that really, really embraces what you're trying to do. And I can speak with confidence now, but earlier in this journey, I was not confident. I was afraid to speak in front of a group. I probably wouldn't be able to hold this conversation with you on a podcast over the internet right now. It I've came a long way, and it's only because I wasn't afraid to be rejected, and it's something that I understood is going to happen naturally. Even the most successful people have been rejected. You just got to know that if you believe in it, someone else will too, and you got to find that pathway to succeed with that.
You preach, girl. And also, rejection is not always a reflection that you won't succeed. Sometimes that rejection can be the fuel that it takes you to keep moving and to keep pushing and to keep refining yourself and your product.
You are 100% correct. Absolutely.
I'd love for you to kind of share, you know, you were at Cornell and now you are in Ohio, and tell me that transition of kind of moving there. Are you like, why did you move there? Are you part of an incubator system there? Is that where your family is?
Yeah. So after graduating from Cornell in 2015, I accepted a full-time offer at E&J Gallo Winery, and I was a new product winemaker there, but the redhead thing started to really become fruitful after I accepted my offer. I had a few more business plan competitions left, and having that additional experience and feedback gave me confidence and made me contemplate, like, maybe I'm going to want to do this full time. But knowing that I made a commitment, when I give someone my word, I'm going to follow through with it. And I really enjoyed myself working there. Sometimes I wonder what would my life be like if I didn't leave, because I really enjoyed my job. My boss was amazing. My coworkers were great. I had some friends out there and learned about myself, you know, financial responsibility and life, being on my own for the first time. But after a year of being there, I just knew if I didn't take this risk now, although I was very happy working for Gallo, I would regret it for the rest of my life. I'd be 80 years old drinking like tea on my rocking chair on a porch and be like, man, I wonder, you know, what would I do or what would happen, whatever. So I'm like, let's do it. I'm going all in. So my family's in Ohio. And it's actually the only state I had legal distribution in. So I thought it made sense, you know, try to conquer the state of Ohio with a distribution and winning the market here and then moving on to the next state. So being here, I've immersed myself in the community. I was part of a We Launch program for women through the Youngstown Business Incubator. Met a lot of women that are doing the same thing as me, trying to make something of themselves and take a risk. And I really have found a huge support system within that, as well as meeting other people and business owners in the community that's been a mentor to me and helping me propel forward. So that's kind of the whole history from New York to California to Ohio as a wine person.
Well, I love that journey, and I love that you took that chance on yourself, and you felt the regret before the decision was made. You know, you're like, if I don't do this, I know that whenever I'm 80, I'm going to feel this regret. And so that hindsight of, or I guess foresight of before it even happens, you know that you're going to regret it. If you don't do it, that's when you know you have to do it. And I love that you jumped in and now look where you are now. And I can't wait to have you back on the podcast in a year and you have your wine in all over the United States. And I'm going to be drinking it when next time we're on the podcast.
Yeah.
We should drink wine together.
Oh my goodness. No, maybe next time I'll just come down to Nashville and we could do something in person. I think that would be so much fun. I'd love to meet you. I definitely love what you're doing to connect, you know, a lot of people with this unique entrepreneurial journey or having that laptop lifestyle. It's a lot of time and effort running a podcast and a blog. People don't realize how much time it actually takes and organization, finding people to interview, and really bringing quality content to people that really enjoy reading blogs and entrepreneurial material. So I give you a ton of credit. So for sure, keep you updated, and definitely would love to do something in person at some point in the future.
Yeah, girl, I would love that so much. I'm vibing with you, and I think that you're incredible, and you're honestly such an inspiration to me that you've just gone all in, and I always admire people who do that, and I love that you are such a unique entrepreneur too. You know, you're a winemaker. You've studied the science of wine, and I think that is so cool. I have one more question for you, but before I ask it, I would love for you to share where people can find you and Redhead Wine online, on the internet.
Absolutely. So my Twitter and Instagram handle are both Redhead Wine. And I have a Facebook, you just type Redhead Wine and find it, as well as my website, www.redheadwine.us.
Perfect, perfect. And I will link all of that up in the show notes as well, so you don't have to worry about that. Everybody can find Marissa and find Redhead Wine and drink her unique blends, and I'm so excited to do that myself. So my last question for you, Marissa, is what does the laptop lifestyle mean to you?
Not being afraid to be unconventional. Growing up, at least for me, I've been taught that I had to work a 9-to-5, go to college, which I did, but also work for a large corporation or do something that is more traditional. But the laptop lifestyle isn't super conventional, and some people might think that it's a crazy thing to even be doing, or are you even adding value, or how do you even make an income by working from home or around the world through your laptop? And it's that challenge, it's a whirlwind, just connecting with people, making it happen, working on something you're passionate about, and being able to do something that makes you happy. It's all worth it at the end of the day, and being that trendsetter and a go-getter with that unconventional thinking that I've really emphasized throughout this podcast is so incredibly awesome and important for someone to try to do in their everyday lives, even if they're not a laptop lifestyle entrepreneur.